C1S. Number 16A.
Yes. Well, I want to put this weekend under a unifying subject so that we have a leading tone through that whole weekend. And what is this unifying subject? I think it is this, that the divine sense of science, theology, and medicine is leavening in the whole world the human sense of science, theology, and medicine. So that we are witnessing in this age a great transformation in the world's thought, what can be considered science. Now, what I feel very much is this, that in the world the concept of science has undergone a great change. It has undergone a great change in so far that natural scientists begin to realize that under the term of science, something much different and something much more must be understood than in the last century, that is, in the classical age of science. And for us, we come to the point where we have to realize what this change is, so that we also approach the subject of science with a higher sense of what science includes. You see, our subject is not only different from natural science in so far that the object of our investigation is different. That while natural science investigates matter as its object, we investigate God, Spirit. But this is not enough. We have to realize more and more that much more is demanded of a new concept of science, and the more one gets aware of this new concept of science, the more one sees in Mrs. Eddy's writings that she had a very broader and higher sense of science than perhaps we usually had. A new concept of science not only today demands that the object of our investigation is different than in natural science, but even in natural science, the standpoint of investigation has changed. And second, also the method of research and investigation has changed. And also, perhaps third, I would say that the method of demonstration has changed. And finally, what comes out more and more is that in natural science also the aim of research, the aim of science, has changed very much. And we must remember that because the whole sense of science has changed in the world, we have come, what the scientists say, to a point of crisis where they begin to realize that science has not really brought that Eldorado, that golden age, which we had hoped would bring, say, even in the last century. But they are now disillusioned in many ways in regard to science. And so they begin to speak about the superstition of science and about the demon of science. Why the superstition of science? Because they believed, as I said, that science will solve everything, that it will bring fullness, plenty, satisfaction, that it will bring the paradise on earth. And they talk about the demon of science because they realize that science has become more and more non-human. I wouldn't say anti-human, but let's say non-human, so that it doesn't really free mankind from its bondage. And when asking what is the deep reason why natural science has failed to bring in this El Dorado, it is because they begin to see that they have taken a limited sense of exact physical science and tried to apply it to other fields than the field of dead matter. You know that physical science has had an enormous success in the field of dead matter. And because people were now blinded by this success, they have taken the method of physical science and have applied it to other fields of science where they shouldn't be applied or couldn't be applied because the conditions were different. They have applied it to the field of living matter, organic matter, like biology, have applied the same method of science to psychology, therefore to the human soul, to the human spirit, without noticing that they were taking a sense of science which was limited to dead matter and applied it in another field. And now, this is the point I want to make for this weekend. And now, let's see that we are not falling into a similar situation. Namely, we all have been brought up in an age, in schools and so on, where the old concept of science has been taught. And so the old concept of science has become innate in us. And at the moment where we begin to apply science to God, we must see that this old concept of science is not sufficient in order to investigate the subject of God. So here I would try this today and tomorrow to pinpoint which factors have to be taken into consideration so as to approach the subject of God with a divine sense of science and not with our educated sense of science. It is for this reason that last time I gave you a short survey over the history of the philosophy of science from Pythagoras up to today. And I just want to summarize a few points so that it reaches over to the chapter on science, theology and medicine. I tried to show last time that from the time of Pythagoras up to the Middle Ages, say up to Kepler, Galilei, about that time, that in that new era of science, that there still was a unity of God, nature, and man in the minds of the scientists. Although scientists were still mystics in a certain way, because they had that sense and consciousness that God, nature, and man form one whole, one unit. That God was the creator of heaven and earth, and therefore the whole world and universe was one universe, and that therefore everything could only be viewed from the point of view of wholeness and oneness. They were in that mystical age still convinced of the unity of being, that there was a planner and a big plan, a grand design and a grand designer, and that everything had to fit into this one world. Therefore, at that time, they didn't have that duality in their mind of the physical world and the metaphysical world. For them, the physical and the metaphysical world still was one. They saw in the physical world nothing else but the reflection of the Divine Spirit. This distinction was only made later. See, up to there it was still that they felt that God has launched the earth into its orbit and said to the proud wave, thus far and no further. They had that innate sense of a mystical unity of creator and creation. And consequently, they had no separation between science and religion. Or I would say between religion and knowledge at that time. So scientists at that time were still religious people, mystic people, with a great adoration for God. And we know that the church was always more or less the seat of knowledge, that it was a church that would institute universities and so on. Also, in that mental era, each phenomena had to make sense, not by itself, but had to make same sense within the whole. They were only interested in something if it fitted into a grand design. And so at that time, science still had to make sense for them, a divine sense for them. And we know that such a science is called a teleological science or a telefinalistic science, namely a science which describes an intelligence which is determined to reach a final goal and has set out that goal right from the beginning. Well, that was that mystical age in which knowledge began to come in and leaven the whole sense of mysticism. Then I showed that with the time of Kepler, Galilei, Newton, especially Newton, a completely different age broke in, and therefore different sense of science. And it is that sense of science which somehow is still innate within us. What is it? With Newton, there came a breaking away from God. Investigation was done on the basis of a phenomena, and experiments were made on the basis of single phenomena and single processes. And they were no more interested in how far such a process was one with the whole design. Also, with Newton, the qualities of being were neglected, because physical science has only to do with quantities. And so the whole field of qualities was excluded out of that sense of science. And we begin to realize, only with this point already, how limited science became and how inhuman or non-human it had to become. Because that which we like in being are qualities. Qualities of beauty, of love, of faith, of hope, and so on. All this was now excluded because physical exact science only deals with quantities, which can be measured, which can be observed, and which can be weighed, etc. So, another point that came in at that stage was that one tried to define a process without the observer, to eliminate the observer, to separate the object from the subject. and to observe a process so that it was not influenced by the subject, by the observer. And so science became even more non-human. Another point is that from that moment on, science became what scientists call blind to the future. You see, at that point, say, just to illustrate it, they began, say, to be able to define the orbit of a shell. If you have a gun and you know with what power you shoot a shell, and you know the weight of that shell, and you know the angle, and you can definitely describe and determine the orbit and know exactly where it comes down to the Earth. And with that, that law is fulfilled. But if there, where the shell comes down, stands a dictator of that country, what happens then? What is now the end, the far end of such a calculation? You see, that at this point, where you only rely on cause and effect as immediate cause, immediate effect, without seeing the whole thing within the whole, then it has no more, it makes no more sense. It has no more a design in it. It has no more a future in it. But mankind wants to have a future. And everything within man is designed for a future and for a final fulfillment. So we see that with Newton, an age broke in which was very limited in the application of science. It had its great success in the technological era, but it was limited. It was limited to the field of dead matter. And it was relying on the law of causality. Whereas later on we began to see with Planck, where he discovered the quantum theory, that everything in nature is not deterministic, but is built on the law of spontaneity and not of causality. And so at once a new concept of science comes in, namely that really in being the fundamental law is the law of life, the law of spontaneity, where man acts freely, spontaneous, where life itself is spontaneous and not based on the law of causality. With the new sense of science that came in the 20th of this century, the qualities were brought in into science. It was no more a disregard of man, as we have seen last time, that the observer plays more and more a part, that the new sense of science becomes now again human. Further, we have seen that in the new investigation of science, they have realized that after all there must be an enormous big plan at work behind everything, like in evolution, so that the new sense of science, the telefinalistic sense of science, is breaking in on human thought again. This is, I think, the most important development which we can see in the development of science. Another point where science has changed very much, it is that the investigation has become more and more metaphysical. Modern physicists reason like this. They say, all right, in the period of classic physics, we were able to determine, say, the orbit of the planets. And through Kepler's law, we can define exactly how the planets move, and we can define the laws of them and put it into a mathematical formula. And then they reason like this. And this is very interesting for what Mrs. Eddy then writes in the chapter. They say, do the planets know the laws of Kepler? They don't know. They don't know any law at all. Therefore, the planets have no intelligence in themselves. Matter has no intelligence and no law in themselves. What then is that which makes the planets move according to law? And so the line from physics to metaphysics is broken. You go over from physics to metaphysics, and they see there must be the idea of law existing which rule the planets. So they go from physics to metaphysics. But not only that. They say, but if Kepler or we have a mathematical formula to define those laws, what is that process of defining it through a mathematical formula? It is a mind process. It can exist in the imagination of man, in the mind of man, who through mathematical symbols can define those laws. And so again, there is a bridge to the metaphysical, to the mind concept of a so-called law of the planets. And from where do we have that mind which can reason according to laws, which can reason according to mathematical symbols? And again, they feel behind there must be a non-human idea and principle. So, can you see that from both sides, from the side, say, of the planets moving according to law, and from the side of humans having a mind defining those laws, again, mental, these two strains must converge into one principle. And so, today they acknowledge that there must be a spiritual principle governing both the actual orbit of the planets and, in the same way, governing the minds that can define everything through mathematical symbols. So, today, more and more again, those two strains of physics and metaphysics converge more and more to a divine unit. So, can you see what happened? If we go back to where we started with the school of Pythagoras, they started off with a unity of God, nature, man. Then in the scientific age, this was more or less analyzed and put into parts, and each part looked at isolated. And today, since about 20, 30 years, one begins to integrate again those findings to see that they are all moving in one unit, in oneness. So there was a going out from oneness, analyzing, and now we have the reversed process of synthesizing or integrating again knowledge into a one principle. So we have to be careful what happens today. You see, if today we feel that science is oneness, and that there is a science of oneness, we have to be careful not to think that that is the same as the ancient mystics conceived of when they were thinking of the oneness of being. Because today, quite a few of the metaphysical or spiritual movements go back to the I Am, to the oneness. But they are not going forward to the I Am or the oneness of being. Most of them are falling back into the mystical concept of oneness. Whereas we have to see that we go forward to the oneness through science, on the way through science and above science to the oneness. This is the crucial point which I see for this age. Not to feel that we have to get hold of the oneness of being, the I Am, the I, by going back to the mystical, but by going forward through the new sense of what science implies to the oneness of being. And if we don't get that tone properly, I think then we are just falling back 2,000, 3,000 years. Therefore, let us perhaps consider some of the aspects of the new sense of science compared with the old sense of science. And perhaps here and there we are doing with the sixth chapter. But when we go through the sixth chapter, we can always rely back on what we are seeing today. See, perhaps the first big point is that the old concept of science is based on the law of causality, cause and effect. And you agree, perhaps, with me that most of our mental processes, day in and day out, are based on that law of causality. We always ask, where did it come from? What was the cause? Whereas in being, there is only the law of spontaneity, the law of isness, the law of life, which is always spontaneous, which is always right out of the one being without any connection with the past. Now, alone this point, if we grasp this point, will be an enormous freedom, give us freedom, because in every situation, we would take the standpoint not of asking where did it come from, what is the cause of it, but we would right away go to the one principle and see that that one principle is life, and there's the law of spontaneity, meaning that every split second, everything is new, completely new. You know quite well from your experience that practically every patient that comes says, here it is, what is wrong with me, and I think it comes from this and from that, or he asks you what you think is the cause, where does it come from? It's that sense of asking for the law of causality. Well, that's all right on the plane of metaphysics, but if we go further to the higher plane of science, we are interested in the law of spontaneity of life. And we'll see when we come to the whole part of theology that this whole part of theology is built really on this law of spontaneity.